I'm Neil Wilkins, and welcome to the Mindful Living Show. I'm here today to talk about the fascinating subject of self-leadership, and I'm joined today by Dan Stanley, personal performance coach and founder of Better Men. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Neil. It's great to be on your show and to have the opportunity to talk about my concept of self-leadership with yourself and your listeners.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be really, really fascinating for everybody involved. And you come at this from quite a distinct background, don't you? Tell us a little bit more about kind of how you kind of got into this from your journey in life so far.
Sure, yeah. So I've had quite an interesting 36 years. I was in the military for a period of time, nearly 12 years. So I've learned leadership from arguably some of the most accurate sources, the people at the sharp end of delivering leadership. And that's not just a theory, but that's the experiential side of it as well. And what I've learned from my time in the military, but more specifically from my journey from how I've experienced difficulty in my life, is that there's a real need to be aware of the concept of self-leadership. And if I was to define self-leadership in only two words, it'd be living intentionally. Living intentionally. When I look at those two words, what that means for me and the whole concept of self-leadership is about aligning your mindset, what's happening up top and in your mind, your inner game, how you think and feel about yourself, your levels of self-awareness, and how that translates to your environment around you. So aligning your mindset with your environment, i.e. the outer game, because when you combine your inner game and your outer game, your mindset and your environment, you have the ability to impact and influence everything in your sphere.
Yeah, some really interesting concepts kind of evolving in what you're saying there. And I know one of the kind of the principles that you kind of sort of operate in is this real kind of balance between, you know, fulfillment and, you know, the perception or the self-perception of success, and balancing that with kind of sort of happiness and health. There's a real kind of holistic sort of well-being thing going on here, isn't there?
That comes from my own experience of success. A few years ago, I was perhaps guilty of aligning my value, perhaps to my worth to everybody else. My net worth is aligned to my self-worth. And from my own experience, that if one chases success, they might find success, but they'll never find happiness and fulfillment. And, you know, perhaps from a man's model of the world, obviously my business is generally targeted towards men. From a man's model of the world, you know, we replicate in our life what we've been conditioned by perhaps our parents or other male role models. And, you know, if we go back to our parents, regardless of the generation, the chances are that they thought that by gaining an education, working in a corporate ladder or starting their own business, that once they've done all these things over a period of time, that would lead them to not only a level of success, but also a level of happiness and fulfillment. And I think what we're seeing now, you know, the real tip of the iceberg here for me is male suicide. You know, the amount of men that take their own lives is perhaps a reflection of how many men are achieving success, but failing when they've achieved that success to find a level of happiness and fulfillment that they thought they would.
Yeah. I think certainly from the male perspective, with a lot of focus at the moment on, you know, the importance of bringing sort of women to the party and into the agendas is totally right. I think at the same time, there's obviously a lot of pressure kind of appearing sort of for men about men. And I know you talk a lot about sort of developing sort of courage and clarity and purpose to kind of just, you know, facilitate and sort of foster that well-being. How do you see this thing playing out with kind of these male sort of role models and expectations?
Yeah, great question. Perhaps if we step back to move forward, you know, some of those extrinsic pressures, things like the Me Too movement and the gender pay gap, I fully genuinely believe, hand on heart, that they're good for masculinity, because that really forces us to look at ourselves from a different perspective. And it makes us more visible. And that's what's important here, because, you know, depending on how you look at psychology, there's a level of ego that sits between who you show yourself to be to the world and who you know you are behind closed doors. And generally, the ego sits between those two as a safety barrier, a psychological safety barrier. And with Me Too, gender pay gap, some of these other things that have perhaps become more prevalent in recent years, I think it's really forced men to look at how they show up in the world. And what that's done is it's allowed us to be better. The men that choose to see these things as barriers, as problems, as unnecessary complications, are the ones that are going to struggle to operate in society as we progress. If we look closer to home, Neil, then the way I look at this is the majority of those pressures that we're talking about here are internally generated. Our perception of who we are, our need to fit into society and to try to be equal instead of an individual, as you mentioned earlier, I think these are the things that really cause the barriers for men. And because they haven't got the skills or tool sets, because they weren't role modeled when they were young boys or adolescents, they don't know how to deal with the problems that were created in today's world. You know, some of those problems, such as social media comparison, you know, all we see now. So my client base, you know, one of the things I ask them to do is to share with me the social media usage or the phone usage. You know, it's so easy to access now through iPhones or through Android. You can see where you spend your time and your device. And if it's spent on, you know, arguably business aside, if it's spent on things like Facebook or Instagram, or there's endless hours scrolling through LinkedIn, the chances are that when you go on there, you're looking for something. You're looking for a certain feeling. And generally that feeling is to understand where you fit into society. But the longer you spend and the more you see, the more that can make you feel insignificant. And I generally feel that with social media now, I think that's a significant challenge alongside men's perceptions of what it is that they need to achieve. You know, if we go back a couple of decades, keeping up with the Joneses, who's probably about the car that you had on your drive, or your business card, if you want to be very particular. Now keeping up with the Joneses is available every single minute of every day. It's here, it's accessible. And when you try to keep up with the Joneses, or you see these people living these jet set lives in you know, the sunshine of Florida or Miami, as you seem to see a lot on social media nowadays, all that makes us do is feel negative about what we've got and what we've created and what our future potential looks like.
Transformational mindset coaching, and it's obviously one of the various kind of sort of I guess elements that you deal with when you're sort of working with somebody. Well, what do you mean by transformational mindset? Kind of what happens, what goes on there?
Yeah, so everything starts with emotional intelligence. Everything starts with you understanding who and how you are, and how you either turn up or how you show up in the world. And the distinction that I make there is that lots of people turn up and very few people show up. You know, it's easy to turn up to put the suit on, to go to work, to be on conference calls, to be around the table with your family in the evening, or the, you know, supporting your son or daughter at the sports at the weekend. But the difference is that when you choose to show up, that's living intentionally, and that's self-leadership. Knowing what you want in the moment, what you're prepared to commit to, what you're prepared to compromise, how your energy levels need to be to reflect how you're thinking and feeling. And, you know, for me, when we're looking at transformation, it all starts with you understanding where you are. Where you are, recognizing where you want to be, and then bridging the gap between the two. And when I kind of took a step back from my life in 2018, I was looking at coaching models. And the one that carried the most credence for me was working with or training with a guy called Brendan Burchard out in America. And his view to success is all built around it being attainable and sustainable, that you can reach it and you can maintain it. Because when I looked at a lot of male role models in my life, they'd gotten to a point in their life where they'd either sacrificed their health, it cost them their marriages or the relationships. Maybe they were distant from their children. And to me, when I looked at success, I wanted it to have this holistic view, this all-encompassing, achieving in work, achieving at home, feeling great about yourself, and having the health to back all those things up. So for me, yeah, the transformational leadership piece, it all comes down to starting with emotional intelligence, knowing where you are, having clear goals about where you want to be, and then through directed effort, achieving those goals. Because strategy is useless without execution.
Sort of lies a lot of the sort of the discipline, if you like, which obviously you've been, you know, hugely fortunate to gain from sort of military background. And I think there's all an awful lot that people can learn if they're coming just purely from a civilian background. I know one of the best sort of leaders that I've ever worked with professionally came from military background, and you know, it was you're often just there sort of feeling almost like awestruck by just the clarity of the destination that you talk about there, kind of where you want to get to, but also the clarity and the realism of kind of where you are today. And he was very, very able and very, very willing to kind of help you on that journey from getting from A to B. But it was done in such a way that you just felt almost sort of swept along by this kind of sort of positive energy. And so it was something that was quite sustainable. And I know you've talked sort of recently about the Stockdale paradox and kind of how that sort of principle works. For anybody who doesn't know that, Do you want to just share a little bit about kind of what that means for you?
So in the Vietnam War, a US soldier was captured, and he was held by the Vietnamese for around 7 years. And during that process of the 7 years, he was extremely tortured. He was physically drained. He was mentally tortured. And throughout these 7 years, this guy, the Stockdale, had no idea when or if he would be released. And eventually he gained his freedom. And when he came back to civilization and back to reality, you know, people wanted to understand how he could endure such torture and such conditions and still have remained positive. And the way that Stockdale explained it was that you have to balance optimism with extreme reality. You've got to remain optimistic that your future is better than your present, and that you've got to embrace the reality of where you are and accept the harshness of it. Because if you go too far in either direction, you'll either lose hope because you'll be too optimistic and those days that you expected to be released never come. But if you embrace the harshness of your reality, then you'll have nothing else but to focus your attention on, and you'll eventually capitulate. So his concepts now, you know, when we look at leadership, the Stockdale paradox, it's an important one to embrace. Because particularly now in our current situation with COVID-19 and the way the world is engulfed with this pandemic, you know, there's certain people out there, the people that are perhaps, you know, the tree huggers, the ones that are extreme optimists, they're going to really struggle to understand how this has happened and how they fit into society right now. And on the opposite side, the people that are so focused on perhaps the harshness of the situation are looking for conspiracy theories. If we look at it from the paradox of Stockdale, both of those people are going to struggle with where we are. Being balanced, understanding and accepting the reality for what it is, people are dying, but also recognizing that we have the option here to create a new future, a better future, based on our learnings and our lessons. That's working the Stockdale paradox.
I love the way you kind of describe that. Again, there's a real kind of clarity in, behind the sort of simplicity of striking this balance. Is that one of the ways, because I know you're sort of very, very keen advocate of developing consistent levels of high performance. And certainly that's something that, you know, I know you sort of talk a lot about in your sort of social media sort of blogs and things. How does somebody, particularly in times of change, and obviously we're going through a lot of change and transition, and, you know, who knows what it's going to be like on the other side of the current situation, how does somebody sort of maintain a really kind of consistent high level of performance?
Never get bored of the basics. For my time in the military, I was essentially in the army, but I was attached to the Royal Marines. And before I worked with the Royal Marines, I held them on a real high pedestal that these guys were a cut above. And I was almost underwhelmed within my first few engagements with them, because I had this interpretation in my mind that these people are going to be operating on a completely different level to everybody else that I'd worked with. But the reality was that they just understood what their mission was. And they never got bored of the basics. The basics essentially was executed to the best of their ability. And when we look at this whole piece about transition from where you are to where you want to be, never getting bored of the basics, understanding that you always have a choice, and you have a choice to take the courageous option or the option to take the comfort option. And I honestly believe this, Neil, I honestly do, that every time you come to the point of decision, you have the ability to choose either a direction that leads you to where you want to be or takes you further away from your end goal. And that's every single decision. And decision fatigue, I generally believe it's real. I encourage all my clients to schedule their meetings early on in the day. I ask them to try and create great habits so that reduces their need to drain their mental energy. So yeah, coming back to your question, never get bored of the basics. Understand that every decision carries a consequence. Be super clear on what it is that you're trying to achieve. Be super clear on what it is that you're trying to achieve. And I think on top of that, have accountability. you know, often there's a lot of psychology that will back up this statement, but you'll let yourself down, but you're less likely to let other people down. So when you employ people to hold you accountable, the chances are that you're going to be much more inclined to carry out what it is that you're going to do and actually make the progress that you set out. And you've probably heard of this, but there's a pond, and it's a nice, calm, flat day. And on a lily pad on this pond, there's five frogs. One of the frogs decides to jump off. How many are there? The answer's still five. You know, the frog didn't jump. He made a decision, but he didn't jump. And unless you act on what it is that your intention is, it's worthless. And I don't know a lot of Latin. Most of my learnings are from experiential learning and probably a keen focus on the subjects I'm interested in. And that is obviously leadership and personal development. But the only Latin, I know two parts of Latin, and one of it is this: acta non verba, actions, not words. And that's, for me, is a real staple of my life.
And it kind of almost then sort of comes full circle that this whole idea of sort of self-leadership does involve others, because it is about the influence. It is about kind of positioning yourself appropriately as you strike that balance within the community or the team or the environment that you're in. So there is a kind of a level of influence, and hopefully in a positive way, the kinds of habits that successful person, in the way that you've defined it there, which is much more holistic, can actually have this lovely knock-on effect to those around them. So self-leadership has this thing which actually is about leadership itself rather than just purely the self. And so am I right in thinking that, you know, as you develop these habits, the spin-off benefit for others who you engage with or those significant others in your world, I mean, there's got to be a positive there as well, hasn't it?
It's about your mindset and your environment working in conjunction. And when they're both working in conjunction with each other, you've got the ability to create impact and influence. But again, everything comes back to you. And there's a concept I talk with my clients, and it's about holding the mirror up. You know, when you hold the mirror up to yourself, what do you see? You know, would you choose to be led by yourself? Because if the answer is no, when you separate your ego, when you remove the feelings from the facts and you choose not to be led by yourself, essentially you can conduct your own skills audit. Because if I was to ask you now, Neil, what in your own words, what are the qualities of a great leader? You'd be able to pick out these words, these values, or these social ideals. And then if we held those up and said, which of those could you tick right now? Which ones are your voids? Let's consolidate our strengths. Let's work on our weaknesses. And let's make ourselves a more rounded individual, a better leader. That's a leader of self and others.
So joined up. It's such a social yet self kind of balance. And it's this beautiful thing about sort of creating habits. It's creating, I mean, I guess without using, no, it is a cliche. It's creating almost like a new reality, isn't it? It is this kind of this better world that you're going to be living and breathing going forward. There's kind of NLP sort of associated here, isn't there? In terms of some of this kind of reprogramming of what might be sort of things that wouldn't have served you in the past, or some self-defeating kind of beliefs that maybe were paradigms, as you've described, you know, from parents and from upbringing and things. It's kind of almost like reshaping something brand new.
You know, neuroplasticity is a well-researched topic right now. You know, there's some interesting books. In fact, the best book I've probably read on applying neuroplasticity is called The Source. It's a female author. She's studied psychology and neuroplasticity, and she's essentially put this framework together, allowing people to transition. Some of it's NLP-based, some of it's perhaps CBT, but the concepts are simple and effective. And for me, when I come back to never getting bored of the basics, you know, that's what I look for. Because if a process is complicated, then you're going to rationalize reasons not to follow it through. So keeping a process simple means that you've got less avenues to become directed down. So when we look at NLP, I think it's a great tool. I think it's really useful for people to be able to understand how their brain functions. And essentially the brain's got two functions, two things the brain's wired to do. That's to keep us safe and to be efficient. So when people are making an assumption that the ego is negative, the ego is that psychological defense mechanism, that safety net that catches us from embarrassing ourselves or for doing any harm. And then the efficiency piece, when we look at neuroplasticity, those neurons that wire together, fire together. So we create these cognitive biases, such as, you know, confirmation bias or availability bias. And these are the things that guide our subconscious behavior. And unless we make those subconscious behaviors and thoughts visible to us, we bring them to a conscious level, they're going to direct who and how we are in life. And that's that whole self-leadership piece. And that's why I said we start with emotional intelligence. Understand who you used to be and how your past has shaped your current reality, and then make a conscious decision. Is who you are now, your level of thinking, suitable for who you want to be in the future? And then through quite a holistical approach, you know, understanding what our focal points are, getting clear on what's really important to the person, the client as an individual, and then moving that forward to understanding how our energy impacts our being. And when I talk about energy, it's on three levels: our mental energy, our emotional energy, and our physical energy. Because the concept that I teach and coach self-leadership through is that your thoughts, feelings, and actions, they all need to be in alignment. Your head, your heart, and your hands, your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, if they're not in alignment, then when your head hits that pillow at night, you're not going to sleep easy. Or when you wake up in the morning, you're going to have so many questions that you haven't got answers to. And that's all because you're living out of alignment.
I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that people listening and watching this in whatever medium, whatever form, are going to be really convinced to take some action and actually engage and sort of watch and hear more from you. I think this is probably set for them so many sort of further questions that they're going to want to answer and sort of delve more deeply in. How do people contact you after this? What's the next kind of step for them?
So LinkedIn is my main social media platform. I've made a commitment to myself that I will post Monday to Friday every week, and I share my thought leadership. Some of my topics may be controversial. Some of them might direct people to provoke some introspection about who and how they are and how they show up in the world. But also, I think I give away a lot of value as well. So LinkedIn under Dan Stanley is where people should head to. My website, I'm in a process of refreshing a few bits and pieces on there to make it more relevant to where I am now and what it is I'm going to achieve in my business moving forward. But if people are interested, then it's definitely through LinkedIn.
Dan Stanley, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity, Neil. Thank you.